I'll just say to Jewish and Jehovah that I can become an angel of type.
No, an angel of heaven.
Yeah.
So are you all important?
Be gentle. Be gentle.
The lady too.
Sport and recreation. For being with us here, this directorate, if you remember, was supposed to make its presentation in our meeting last week, but our time was too limited. We could not, in fact, I think we wanted to buy it more than we could chew. That's why we had to put this one in abeyance, so that we asked that we start today at 9:30 up to 11 o'clock. We will be interacting with the directorate on mass participation. Later on, we will interact with the Department of Art and Culture on the library. So we said we'll start with you for the recreation, because, like I said, we were supposed to have presented last week. So without much ado, I'm going to call you the director. The director for this?
Yes. She's still on the way.
Oh.
But I'm doing it.
Okay, no.
She's here already.
Okay. No, that's fine. If you are doing the presentation, then you'll find us on the way. We can actually proceed. I want to throw the ball into your court. KPMG. What's PMG? PMG,
Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Parliamentary Monitoring Group. You're also...
I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, yes. Thank you. You're always here with us.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we have got this document that was given to us last week, but I need to understand there's another document, this one now. This one is a refined copy. For now, we are actually using this one. But there isn't much difference between.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sports and Recreation today is represented by our Director General coming in just now. And on my left I have Alison Basho. She's the Chief Director at Land License. Well, she's in her capacity as Acting Director for School Sport, which also falls under mass participation. Is also going to do a presentation on the school sport. And then I'm Chobodilem Konto, who is the director in the mass participation program. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and the honorable members. We're going to take you through the presentation this morning, just briefly highlighting what the responsibilities of the mass participation program is. We're going to indicate some of the success areas and point out areas of learning and improvement. And as I said, we're going to be using the new document that we issued out. But it's really more a presentation style where we've reduced the pages to fewer and put more slides in one page, and a very minor change in content. The purpose of the mass participation program, obviously, on which we should be judged, is to contribute to increasing the number of participants in sport and recreation in South Africa. And the strategic goal of the grant is to promote sport and recreation activities through mass participation. I think the key is that we need to have numbers in participation, but also to develop sport in the communities and schools through national coordination, monitoring and evaluation, and facilitating those integrated campaigns to achieve our goals, which ourselves, the provinces, and the local municipalities, the NGO, the federations, etc. Incidentally, Land License Services, which Alison is in charge of, deals mainly with the federation. And there is the policy formulation and the development of the blueprint. The outcomes of the program is lifelong participation. The saying is, more people, more active, more often. Really, that's the whole idea. And this really forms the base of the mass participation model, which we're going to be talking about later on. And to increase the numbers that participate, we're going to be showing you some of the results here as we do the presentation, how the numbers have increased in the program since we started way back in 2004. And then, obviously, to improve delivery capacity and to both status in the provinces themselves, the national federations, and all the structures have to deal with the delivery, and as well as improve partnerships, because these are critical. The relationship with ourselves and the provincial government and in the three spheres of our country, they are critical in the delivery process. And improve community links, particularly forging ahead the relationship between ourselves, the communities, and the schools. And legacy programs and projects at the end of the day. With the idea now, obviously, using 2010 as the bandwagon, that at the end of the day, our community should be left with a legacy that can show what the contribution of sport has been, and hopefully a viable and sustainable legacy rather than a white elephant. The directorate in the chief directorate, the community mass participation, which is the Dialala community sport, a special project, legacy and mass mobilization. I must mention that obviously that we link closely with the 2010, as you would have heard last week in the presentation of the 2010 unit, they touched a lot on the legacy mass mobilization. But the actual running of those projects is being coordinated through Chogosidium Konta here under the mass participation program. And then obviously school sport, the mass participation in school, and competitions in school, and Alison will be talking to that just now. The purpose of Siadala and community sport and recreation is to promote special projects on transformation issues, gender, rural areas, etc., the disabled, etc., can't really speak much of those, but to actually also act on other national priorities, like dealing with youth in issues of HIV and AIDS, and the way we can contribute to sport with awareness campaigns, etc. And helping celebrate the national days, we know it's the Youth Month, the Smart Day, and various others, like the International Day of the Aged, where we promote participation and active involvement by the elderly people, etc. And but most importantly as well, the Indigenous Games.
Let's welcome the DG of the Department of Sport and Recreation. Welcome.
Thank you.
You can only be delayed.
Thank you, sir. I understand it.
Thank you, DG, for joining us. I had already introduced the team on your
okay.
behalf.
No,
thank you. And the Indigenous Games. I think this is the area that is increasingly becoming more important because we believe it's that. As part of the Indigenous knowledge system that we really need to begin to activate. We've always said that any of the sports that are now a big industry in the world and Olympic Games started off being Indigenous Games in themselves. And I think we need to be beginning to take more pride in that. And in fact, we'll talk later to the thrust of our business plan this year, which is to really focus on the development of Indigenous Games. And then I've already mentioned the mass mobilization and legacy project as well. And through the mass mobilization and legacy project, to use the 2010 theme to make communities aware of what sports can do, to make them aware of the opportunities that are available through 2010. And you know, we've got volunteer programs that Mr. Moyer talked to last week already to yourself, and a number of other things. For instance, the establishing of clubs that can be left and assisted to be sustainable moving forward. And hopefully also some facilities as well. I'm not going to talk much on school sports. These are the areas of school sports. Alison will touch on them. But funding, coordinating the various sports activities at various levels as well. Obviously, taking into consideration the intergovernment relations with the provinces, provincial responsibilities, our responsibilities, and the responsibilities of the Department of Education. In terms of the collaborative agreement, which is on point 2 here. Alison is going to talk to that later. I think here, this slide really, number 9, on the conditional grant budget, the idea is really to give you a historical perspective and possibly simply the importance of the grant, and obviously of sports and recreation as a department since it started. The grant, when it started in 2004, we had only 20 million rand, and the following year 30 million rand, and in year one we dispensed 1 million rand per province, and in year two 2.67 million rand per province, and since then we've been dispensing in total to the provinces. This year alone we are now at 290 million. That just shows the growth of the fund and obviously the need for it and the role that it plays in our communities. These are the various sporting codes that are involved, and you know, mostly the ball skills. Most of the ball skills are involved, including gymnastics. But what is exciting is to now moving into the other areas which have been not so popular before, like learning to swim and dance sport as well, being taken on board. But the last ones as well, we're beginning to get from the community, from the federation, the need for sport that has normally not been attended to, extreme sports and cycling as well, which we now need to begin to look into. And obviously, I think it's important to touch on some of the major achievements, in line with the increase in the grants that we've experienced over the number of years. We've talked about issues of transformation, of developing the communities, of developing sport, and intergovernment relations, and in particular to increase the numbers that participate. And some of the major achievements are on the disability issue, the capacity building workshop on that, so that we can really begin to address seriously the issues of the disabled and gender issues, etc. The inner city, dealing with the scourges of children in conflict with the law. Inner city tournaments become very, very important. And capacity building of the grant coordinators and that we use for sport. In fact, one of the complaints that we've always had provincially and in particular has been the rate at which they've been losing these coordinators, these volunteer coordinators. And they're saying now we have to get new people in all the time. The reason we're losing them is because now that they have got skills and knowledge, they become employable and they can actually get formal employment. As soon as they get formal employment, we then have to take out of the unemployed to fill up the vacuum, and also they can get employed. So this has really been the major contribution of this program in capacity building. Recreational rehabilitation project with correctional services, the five-a-side soccer, particularly for inner city projects, the aerobics festival for the Asian, and the UK School Linkage Partnership Program, which is doing an exciting job and a very good job in the school, the training of coaches, and the holding of Blaster Sports Festival, and Alcine is also going to touch on those. But also I think what is significant is that apart from just the previous slide where we highlighted the achievements in terms of our mandate as sports and recreation and the mass participation program, but we also have a role as a department to also contribute to government priorities. And the anti-poverty campaign, I've already mentioned the employment of coordinators to whom we pay a stipend. And I mean, to date, we're dealing with in excess of 7,000 people. The HIV and awareness messages in school sports and in youth events, and crime combating contribution as well through the working with the Department of Correctional Services, the inner city project that I've referred to, and the community policy forum project. One of the very interesting ones and very successful ones running in Alexander Township, where the SAPS really has given themselves a very, very good job they're doing. And also, just to see also, private business coming in this case, Chicken Bacon, being supportive of this project. And our Deputy Director, Monty Nohash, is running that one and has been consistently giving us excellent reports on this. But I'm saying that, in a sense, this slide begins to say that sport and recreation. Foundation is responsible far more beyond just the promotion of sport to also addressing the social challenges that we are facing as a country. I think having looked at our responsibilities and some of the successes that we have, we need also just to say what is the thrust of the current business plan moving forward. Well, obviously we want to deepen the current activities. Mass mobilization and legacy projects because of 2010 are going to be very much in the forefront. Rural sports and recreation. I think maybe just touching on mass mobilization and legacy. One of the areas that is sensitive to us is the mass participation, particularly the communities that are not close to the hosting cities. And therefore, what is going to happen to them? What hope do they have? And what is it that they can do we want to leave them with a legacy. That's starting. One of those, obviously, is going to do schools, competition with schools, the heart-to-heart project in schools as well, and communities. Which is going to end up basically the community and the school adopting a country that is going to qualify to come and stay in the country, and they're going to learn everything about that country and basically be supportive, kind of mascot in each way for that particular country, so that the countries that visitors, I think Moyo spoke to that, feel welcome. But I think also it's going to be very important that with the recent xenophobic, if I can use the word for lack of a better description, attacks, that our communities really begin to assure the world out there that they are welcome in the country. Promotion of drug-free sports, Kimoja, this is becoming increasingly important. We spoke about the scientific unit that is working on that in this regard as well, and for us to deal with the youth in this regard. Okay. And I've already mentioned these other programs that we need. And then these are some of the challenges that we have. I think one needs to be honest, because if one is not honest about the challenges, one cannot improve. And I think we stand to everybody to say that monitoring and evaluation capacity is a challenge. And within the provinces as well, there is a challenge with personnel and systems. And also our presence within the provinces. And I think the DGS also in some of the presentation talked about the plan to now begin to be present with the regional offices. It's very, very important. And risk management to obviously counter under expenditure and also improve quality expenditure. What has been the impact of the program? I think regardless of the challenges, the grant has grown in this advance. We have shown it in the slide of the budget. We've had the 2005 and 2006 evaluation report that made a very good case for the grant. And then we've had we received another impact study on school mass participation programs that confirmed the value of the grant and its impact on the community. And also the DG raised this question at our technical min-mac with the provinces to say, do you have reason to continue with the grant? And anecdotes came up in their dozens to say the grant is working and is important and needs to carry on with achieving a lot for our communities. Yes, indeed, the value for the RAND can be extended by revisiting the MCP model. And obviously other positive outcomes like wellness, economic impact, social cohesion, and increased participation in the house. Now, the extension of the value of the RAND that we spend is very much in the forefront now, and the DG is relentlessly driving that and saying, Liela and your team and the provinces, you need to revisit the mass participation model. Is it doing what it's supposed to do? In fact, if you go to our published strategic document, the minister goes right at the heart of that program and say it's important for us to revisit what we do, why we're doing it, and for whom we are doing it, and what we are achieving with it. And I think that opening statement in our published strategic document really talks to us revisiting the model. And we are busy with that exercise. But maybe just to share with you, just in brief, what we believe the model really should be addressing is that as a base, market participation should be giving us an opportunity for increased number of people coming through. I think we've tended to concentrate on competition and neglected recreation. Whereas if we increase the mass of recreational activity, we get a lot of people being active, out of which then you begin for people to formalize themselves into clubs, into competition, and eventually, obviously, to achieve the high performance level through the talent identification program. And we believe that we need to be revisiting the hub, the context of the hub vis-a-vis the world, and say, if we're going to be increasing the number of participation, the hubs are within a certain radius. Whereas if you're using the world concept, you are making sure that every ward is actually participating, and therefore potentially, if every ward was, every district municipality and local municipality was involved through the ward system in sporting activity, you are potentially covering every square kilometer of our country in increasing mass participation. So this is the model which we have to revisit, because it's going to determine the quality of what we do. I will not bother you so much, because I need to really round off so that we can get into the other presentation. But these are some of the, for your information, some of the critical progress that we've made in terms of what we've declared as our targets in increasing the number of participation, the number of people that have been trained with accessible health, and etc. The figures there speak for themselves. But most importantly, if you think that from the beginning, looking at the bottom there, that we are now have moved. The initial figure of participation in the program started with 273,000. Now we are talking of closer to 3 million participation in sport and recreation. Some of this will be covered by Alison in terms of school sport, but I will not really bother you much now in detail in terms of the various achievements that we've had. I think I've spoken to that, just indicating the progress that we've made in terms of increasing the number. Say our papers are to increase the number of participants. That slide speaks just to that. And I think the grant is necessary to continue to do that work, because we believe that the more people are active of all ages, we can begin then to reduce the health bill, and we can begin to reduce the social ills of HIV and AIDS, as well as crime, which is an increasingly a problem. This is just a slide on the Learn to Swim program. And indeed, the mass participation program is key in the development of sport in the communities. And the definition of communities includes schools, but also the development of communities through sport. If you go to that model, we're saying it's not only participation, but it's based also economic spin-off and skills and development that takes place amongst those that participate. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Can we get the other presentation, because we by 11 must step off sport and recreation. The gentleman has just joined us is Dr. Dimini Domini. He comes from arts and culture.
Oh, okay.
So 11 will be interacting with him.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Don't get surprised. Can we get the other presentation on mass sports in school, so that we take them as a package? Thank you.
Chairperson, members, I think that the Chief Director of Mass Participation is being let off lightly, because he should be doing this presentation as well. But be that as it may, thank you very much. I think that we were at one stage hoping to be able to do this when the Minister did his budget presentation to you. but time would not allow on that particular occasion. Chairperson members, sporting schools is obviously a very important component. Many of you will be very well aware of the historical perspective, so I'm going to jump through it as quickly as I can.
Do you have a copy of this presentation?
Where are copies?
We
copy that.
Don't know about the second. There were two copies that were handed out to you.
No.
Oh, here they are. They were not distributed. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Our apologies. It should have been distributed.
I see the special delegate from Gauteng, and welcome. You're welcome. You were with us last week, and we're happy that you are here again. We started at 9:30. That's the announcement we made in that meeting last week. Okay, can you go?
Okay.
And please, I think we must have some, because I see now it's by 9:30, I'm sure it must be through your presentation.
Yes,
so we have
yes,
not
yes,
we will be for engagement.
Thank you, Chairperson. Hope members are now on the same page as I am, literally and figuratively. As members will recollect, because I think that you have the experience and the long knowledge that perhaps many of us in the department don't have, physical education was actually taken out of the school curriculum in about 1994. In 2005, when the new minister and deputy minister came in, they started negotiations. Well, it culminated in 2005 with a framework on collaboration between the Department of Education and Sport and Recreation, which defined a lot of what the Department of Education should be doing and what the Department of Sport and Recreation should be doing. So it was trying to set the boundaries for ensuring that physical education and sport in the schools actually happened. As a result of that document, the National Coordinating Committee was established, which is obviously quite familiar to you and is known as NACOC. And from that time as well, physical education has been brought back into the curriculum. And it is now 45 minutes a week in the GET band, and it's about, I think it's about 60 minutes in the FET band within the education system. The Department of Education is also quite clear that it's now called physical education in the life orientation component of the curriculum. It is examinable as well. And so there has been vast improvement on that, and I think that education needs to be to receive a pat on the back for that. In terms of the mandates arising out of that framework, education is very clearly responsible for physical education, for extramural activities and inter-school leagues up until district level. And then sport and recreation, because it becomes more national level in terms of our responsibility, we take over at the level of regional to international level, and obviously from our perspective, in terms of National Sport and Recreation Amendment Act, we're very keen to get people, as has been said by Mr. Biela, increasing numbers involved in sport and recreation. One of the best ways to do that is obviously with the kids, and to try and promote this concept of lifelong learning, not only in terms of the academic component, but in terms of the sport and recreation component. Some of our responsibilities, as I said, the entry level is very important to us. We also see that there's a very clear role for the National Federation, and as does the Minister and Deputy Minister, in terms of the sport and schools component. Another of our roles is to mobilize the resources and technical expertise and support personnel, so that we can actually train the educators. The minister is very clear that educators must lead this process because they are the people who know how to deal with the children. So we're trying to support those people in particular. The coordination of sport and school activities from provincial to an international level, and then obviously we cooperate with SASCOC as the Sports Confederation and Olympic Committee In terms of the international representation component, and I'll come back to that later on in the presentation because there have been some developments in that area. Some of the joint responsibilities, and with any agreement, it's not going to be absolutely defined. You know, there's not going to be a clear box that you put education into and that you put a different box for sport and recreation. And so there's some grey areas in between. So, for example, we've identified the calendar so that we make sure that the children are not taken out of school during contact time, that we need to agree what is the role of educators in the time for sport. And here we have the issue about training educators, for example, if they want to become an official or a coach. Can they do that in school time? Can we persuade the Department of Education to release them at certain times? The issue about whether educators can be volunteers in sport, because obviously quite a few of the sports activities and physical education activities take place over weekends, for example, which is not necessarily within school time or within the formal contact time. And within this context, we also need to understand the role that the unions are playing, understandably, to ensure that the educators get the best deal, but within our approach, it also needs to be affordable at the end of the day, so that learners are not compromised. We need to have a look at what are the criteria for including sports on the program. So, for example, if you do something like tennis, is it actually going to help you in terms of your hand-eye coordination? If you do athletics or if you do cross-country, is it actually going to contribute to your fitness levels? If you do gymnastics, is it actually going to contribute to your suppleness of your body and your balance and those types of things? Education, obviously, needs to help us in terms of the indemnity when the learners are taken off the school property. Quite a few schools obviously have very good facilities and some do not. So we need to be working together to make sure that facilities are open to people who want to use them. The training I've spoken about, and as Mr. Biela said, we also need to make sure that the government imperative is addressed. So it's the drugs in schools that seem to be creeping in, issue of teenage pregnancies, HIV and AIDS, and so on and so forth, the social cohesion components that we need to look at. We've defined some of the National Federation's responsibility. They are obviously the technical experts in the country. They are working on the issue of talent identification. We also are having a look at the role of the school sports committees, and I'll come back to that a little bit later on, because they need to be, as has been clearly said by your colleagues in the portfolio committee and by the minister as well, they need to be made up of predominantly educators. And the history of sporting schools has been that many of the school committees have been from people who are not directly involved in the Department of Education. And the issue of CASASA, which is the Confederation of School Sport in Southern Africa, and the International School Sports Federation. Federation should also be advising us on what is best or better practice. You know, what can we do better in South Africa, having learned from the experience of other countries? And then ultimately, as the Minister says, national federations are responsible for the sport that happens in the school context. In terms of the grant that we get, we effectively get two different types of grants. One is funding that we maintain within the department, and then the other funding is the DORA grant that we have. So this is addressing a little bit of both. So in the past financial year, there were 100 school sports festivals. This is a mass participation component held around the country during the last financial year. And that would be predominantly funded from the DORA grant, which goes to the provinces. Through assistance from the British Council, there were 12 schools that educators from South Africa went to visit in the UK, and that was to help them to upgrade their skills and understanding of physical education in that context. The UK has a lot more money to throw around. I mean, they get billions of pounds into their school sports system, which obviously we would like to aspire to, but it's going to take us a little bit of time to get there. In terms of the people who've actually benefited in terms of numbers, 350,000 learners, educators, 10,000, and we also have about 2,400 volunteers involved. In the competitive school sports side, so those were essentially the provincial and national competitions that were held. So the national competitions are essentially funded from our grant, which is held within the department. So we had 6,294 athletes, etc. there, going up to 9 national events and 4 international events. And we also facilitated 9 school sport committee meetings. For both programs, in terms of the mass participation component and the competitive component, there are about 3,000 coordinators who are paid a monthly stipend, and Mr. Biela referred to that early on, in terms of the benefits of that becoming employable in other jobs as they move out of the system. In terms of plans for this financial year, within the department, we have 41 million rand for youth in terms of the school sport program, and our estimated budget for the competitive program is 32 million rand, and in theory the rest would be used for the mass participation component in school sport. We obviously cater for age groups between 13 and 19, and this is one of the other things that we need to be discussing with education and the physical education experts in the country at the tertiary institutions, to see what type of activities we should in fact be running at primary school in terms of developing skills and basic fitness. We also need to ensure that there's a policy framework in place, which would have to be agreed essentially between the two departments. And so the Sports on the Crow program I've mentioned, whether primary school events should be at a provincial level rather than at a national level, and so we don't cause any burnout of the youngsters, and that we balance it by trying to ensure that they carry on with their sports. And we also need to be very clear about who is responsible for what in terms of hosting events, in terms of the National Department of Education, Provincial Department of Education, and their counterparts within sport and recreation, the responsibility for the National Federation as well. In terms of the challenges, I mentioned earlier on the schools committees for the various sports. Over the years, they seem to have developed this idea that they are completely autonomous, particularly from the National Federations, and there are some turf battles that happen between the school sport committees and the National Federation. And so we're beginning to work on that to say, you're all part of one system, full stop. As you know, there is an organization, an NGO being established, and the South African School Sports Association. They've had some conversations with the portfolio committee, and we need to understand how they fit into the system, and particularly promoting the role of educators within that context. Somewhere along the line, the debate on combat sports, I mean, amateur boxing is saying to us, because combat sports are not allowed in the schools, it's affecting our ability to ensure that we have transformation as we actually get youngsters coming through, not only to go to the Olympic Games ultimately, because we need to start fairly young, but it's also affecting those people who might in fact become professional boxers and be able to earn a living out of the system. I've mentioned it before, the issue of the educator as an employee versus a volunteer. Our Deputy Minister and Minister are obviously very keen to expand the time for physical education in the curriculum, and it's something that I think you as a select committee will look at in terms of whether you expand the school day and make it longer. That would help us, obviously, but it may have other implications that you would need to look at and education would need to look at. So what we're essentially saying in that, and what education is saying, is that what we need to be focusing on is promoting the extramural activities and program, so that we can make sure that the kids are active in that context of the curriculum and outside of the curriculum. Because at the current time, the curriculum is too full to include added time for physical education. We also need to agree and be promoting a predictable and full competitive program. And reinforcing that line that says, for those sports that are on the school's program, no learner should pay to compete in such competitions. And similarly, no learner should pay to compete in the school sport festivals. Because what we're trying to do is to encourage this, and to ingrain it in people's activities and lifestyles. In terms of the way forward, we're trying to make that connection between the school sport committees and the national federations. We are establishing a working group with the Department of Education. This was as a result of a meeting between the two deputy ministers on the 4th of June. And I think that will ease a lot of the issues that have arisen in the past couple of months, so that we can actually move forward together. And I think it's going to be a very constructive, and not just looking at what happens within the curriculum context, but what happens between the two departments. We need to revitalize NACOC and make sure that it works. It is part of the collaborative framework, so it's there. We need to make it work full stop. And as I said, building school sport into the extracurricular program. And then identifying additional areas between a cooperation between the two departments, because there are a whole lot of other areas we can cooperate on, and with other departments as well. So social development in terms of the drugs in schools program is an area that we need to cooperate. The Department of Correctional Services is also quite keen on the sports program, and I saw at the weekend that a resident of one of our correctional facilities was talking to youngsters and saying crime doesn't pay. So those types of initiatives that we can also look at. So there are a whole lot of areas, not just in terms of education's responsibility, but our responsibility and other government departments that we need to be looking at and cooperating in a far more systematic way. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You did very well in terms of time.
Yes.
You have left us with more time, an extra 5 minutes.
Okay.
For interaction. Honourable members, we have been listening attentively to the two presentations as made by Sports and Recreation, mass participation in general, and mass participation mainly in schools. Those are the two presentations we have been listening to. I'm now going to afford you an opportunity to comment, to ask questions, to engage with the two presentations simultaneously. We've got about 35 minutes or so to do so. Honorable Masilu, Honorable Sikali, Honorable Mama Two.
Thank you.
Let me just recognize you all. Honorable Sikali will come this way, then Honorable Kaveri, Honorable Lamula, and Honorable Majala Makuwari. In that order.
Thank you. Let me thank the department for the presentation. And also to acknowledge that the Indigenous sister departments like social development, health, and education. On page 2, and that the Ajala Christ Committee for Corporation. I just want to check with the department if you can be giving a list of those schools which are taking part on this program to check in the provinces whether they are visible or not. Because sometimes we see them on the paper, but when you do oversight visits, you don't see them. And the same page, conditional grant budget. I see here that the year 1, year 2, up to 5, same amount. I will give you the same amount to all the 9 provinces as equal, because to me, provinces are not having the same size and same population. I don't know if maybe the breakdown is equal to all the 9 provinces. And sports codes. I'll talk about cricket and rugby, just to check what age is targeted at school for educators. And is it also visible in the black schools? Chapter 7, here I see aerobic festival for the aged. Is it in line with the social development program or just a program for sports and health, and for sports and recreation? The last one here, there's an anti-poverty campaign, employment for coordinators, stipend 7,000. I think this 7,000 are the coordinators. How much do they pay them per month? And also linked with the last presenter for both programs, about 3,000 coordinators pay a monthly stipend. There's no figure or amount reflecting here how much they pay them. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much. Next one.
Thank you. Can you take this on the first document?
under people. I don't know whether this applies to the people that over to the students or to the learners that are in urban areas, because when you are talking about the gender in rural areas, I don't see any disabled people that are doing sports, and also the adult people. So I don't know if the department can assist on that in rural areas, more especially in rural in the Eastern Cape. Also on sporting codes, I want to know the dance sport and cycling, is it applied also in urban, because there are so many talented people in rural, they need to be capacitated in, also in this sport code. Another thing under key challenges with the grant, I see that there's a lack of monitoring. I want to know from the department, is there any quick plan to check if they can monitor the provinces? Because this thing doesn't happen in our areas, more especially in the rural areas. Thank you,
Secretary. Thank you very much. Next.
Sporting school is in fact there. I so impressed that physical education is now going to happen in the school. But I'm afraid because the things that you think have to take the responsibility. Though there are somewhere where it mentioned that there will be some good new tasks who will get second, maybe to assist in schools, if maybe I see that well. But I've noticed that sometimes there are volunteers from overseas who try to assist physical education in schools. But the educators refuse to assist them because there's a lot of work that the educators should do. So, and it is better if maybe the educators are there to assist, because among the learners, you find that there are some learners who have some handicaps that the educator knows about that handicap, and this particular person, a volunteer, doesn't know. So, I don't know how is going to be introduced to the educators to take a lead in this activity, because it is very good for the learner. Another thing that I've noticed and I'm happy about that, and I don't know how it is introduced, especially to the rural areas, is the sport code of the because our people nowadays can't unnecessarily need to lack of exercise. I think this the team will explain to us how it's going to be done to the specifically to the rural area. Thank you,
Chair.
Some of my questions have been covered. No, I still believe that if we can keep the youth, keep them playing, like in our dancing with our song TV, and even some of them witnessed the poke-up, they were the tactical witnesses saying that they like to play, they are happy when they play, they deviate from the evil, doing the evil and the wrong things, and they really enjoyed what we saw on TV. So I think that actually motivates the department to really invest in our youth where sports are concerned. I don't think you are really achieving what you want to achieve, goal set on the youth. And I want to know if we do have sufficient funds for this mass participation program. We really have sufficient funds, because we are battling with a qualified audit, isn't it? It's important before the department. Do we have sufficient funds? And if we do not have, what are we going to do to really achieve our goals set? And rural areas are still not benefiting from all these programs. And I've seen this, and I've been working with the minister in the Eastern Cape, and surprisingly, things are falling in line there. Rural areas not being able to participate in sports. Clubs, our best players are still, our best players, and even our school children are still being taken up by clubs. Best schools, private schools coming into our rural areas, taking our best players. Just as a community with one of our committee secretaries, Charles actually played so well, he reached the Craven Week. And he's already taken up by a private school. It's just, how can I say, it's out of the system for always now for the rural areas. What are we doing to avoid these things happening with our, with even our players? I remember the time when we were down in the Eastern Cape, there was a club that did extremely well. And when they called me after they won the tournament in Durban, they said five of their best players were taken up by bigger federations because they cannot afford to pay these players, they cannot afford to see to their to the best in their best interest, and they are out of the system for kids always. I still say I believe that if we can get the youth to play on a regular basis and get the sports fields in order, especially in the rural areas, get them into the sports fields, we can avoid them from being caught up in crime. And then I would like you to speak out on the DORA grant that goes to the provinces. I'd like you to elaborate and explain more to us in this committee on the DORA fund. Thank you. I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, can the department respond? Let me really hand it. When did you put all the questions?
No,
I always want to put my oh no. no. Sorry, sorry. I'll come up for you.
Are you gonna do the questions after?
Yeah, I'm doing the questions after that. I need original
ideas.
I don't want to be triggered by people's questions, but okay. You're coming. Yeah, no, I don't want to have time to read it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I've been partly covered by my colleagues. But you know, I'm worried about these indigenous games. Yes, they do happen and they are quite visible, especially in the rural areas. But you don't see them in the urban areas, you know. I think there's we need to make some means to encourage our kids in the urban areas to start playing such games because, you know, our youth in the urban areas are still believing that when you socialize, you must go and drink beer and take drugs. So I'm worried that if the department can do something about the youth in the urban areas, introducing indigenous games. And I do hear the department that is taking out some grants to provinces. But when it comes to provinces, again, there's this third sphere of government, municipalities. That's where things are happening, supposed to happen, in fact, but things are not happening. You'll find that their budget is not corresponding with the provincial budget. Money sent to them as municipalities do something else rather than concentrating on sports. So I wonder, what is the department planning to do about that? Because that's where we are lacking. Find that municipalities are only interested in delivering some services like water, electricity, and so forth. But less care about promoting sports in our township. Yeah.
My other concern is I heard the presenter talking about we should start thinking about extending school days. But you know this country, this day, these unions, they're so powerful. I doubt if they agree on that. Because maybe if you say we extend school hours in a day, then I would understand. Because, you know, unions will now come up and say that we want overtime pay. Why now school days are being extended? And I think that the Department of Education, together with the Department of Sports, should come together and situate how to they go around in implementing extra hours for schools so that we can have our kids playing sports. Thank you.
I think let's respond to this. These questions are too many. So I'm going to allow other hands. Now, I thought that was the last, only those are the only people that looked like the other people.
Yes.
We will therefore allow the department to respond. We will take a second round of questions.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Department?
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought I should just start and then allow the team to respond. I'll ask Kayla to specifically respond on DORA. Alison will respond to some of the issues about sports in schools, and Mr. Biela here will deal with the issues of mass participation. But generally, if you allow me to speak on the question of physical education, I thought I should start there. In the continent, we do not have anything called physical education at this point. The curriculum of physical education has to still be developed, and that's something we want to do as a department, so that we can assist the Department of Education on developing a curriculum which will then entrench the values that we encapsulate as a country to the kids, so they can then have their choices. When they make their choices, for instance, as the members are saying, of choosing between alcohol and treasuring their own bodies, it's a value system that should go in there that will guide them, which they should get when they sit in that 45 minutes in class. They should be guided in those kind of values of understanding how they should treasure themselves. That kind of curriculum doesn't exist at this moment. What we have and what we seem to be mixing is physical education vis-a-vis physical activities, and we think activities make physical education. Physical education is about the value system that we want to entrench in kids, so that they then understand how to love themselves, begin to work with others in teams, and collaborate as citizens of this country. That one, whether kids are handicapped or not, everybody can get that class lecture from a teacher, and it's part of the curriculum. And if we have to develop a curriculum, we'll have to do so and make sure that there's also lesson plans for teachers so that we can assist the Department of Education with those kind of lessons. And it's something that we can collaborate on so that we make that kind of distinction. When it comes to materials on physical activities, that we already have. But it's a question of getting teachers, as you say, to have that kind of mind shift so that they can do the extramural activities with kids. And find time. You remember when we grew up, Wednesdays were sports day. We went to school on Wednesday very jolly, knowing that when you go to a school on Wednesday, you're going to be active and you're going to associate and no tension. And you didn't have to have shoes, actually, or takis to do that. We were all barefoot, wearing our shorts, whether they were the same color or not. That was not the issue. The issue was to pull us together to do those activities. And that's what we killed, unfortunately. That's what we want to bring back. And when we talk about it, that having those Wednesdays and those times, so that kids can be active as well. But it doesn't take away the value system that you want to teach. At least that activity will teach them hand and eye coordination and all those kind of movements, so that they can do that skill of when they finally get to a sporting code, that they do have those skills, be it a hula hoop or whatever. They can do those things, and they're not expensive. And you know that this room could turn and have about 40 kids actually doing some movement, then you don't need facilities for that. So really, it's getting that kind of mentality and getting teachers to collaborate. Education prides itself at the moment that they already have an agreement with SATU, so I don't think we should worry. There is an agreement with SATU already that teachers will then do extra time in assisting us with extramural activities. And if I'm right, Alison, is it 150? I'm not sure the hour that they'll be getting. But what we're talking about when it comes to volunteers, really, it's not, we don't want to put a non-educator in the school. We don't want to do that. But what we want to do is to begin to cluster schools so that one person who is coordinating for the department as a volunteer or coordinator of a cluster of schools, make sure that that happens in every school. So that's the idea. So that we don't say we'll take a person, put them in a school, and that person then tries to replace the educators. No, we don't want to take spot out of the hands of educators. We should just make sure that, which one we want to do, Alison will speak more to that, coach, to train them as coaches, as administrators of sports, so that at least they know. And when they link up in their own sporting code structure, these NGOs that keep on, you remember with USASA, and then USASA died, now SASA has emerged, that those codes must be linked with federation. So there's that kind of alignment. So when we identify talent, we make sure that that talent is nurtured and is then fed into the right channel, whether it be through academies and so on. We have members mentioned one of the issues of stealing of our kids very early from our area. As soon as we identify talent, that's something that's going to be big, Honorable Amula. These companies have got money. These clubs have got funds. And again, for me, ties up with the value system that we can teach the kids from young. If you catch them very young and you teach them a value system, money would not be the thing that drives them. If you offer a child who has nothing and who doesn't see beyond where they are at this point ahead, if you offer them even 2,500 a month, they will take it. And we see them actually coming up as, even if you look at sports like rugby, you've got kids coming up, hardly 2 years, they're out of the system. They're 2 years in the glamour, everything is going very well, 2 years later, gone. It's because we caught them too early in the system. We didn't allow them to grow. And they are being pushed to be, some of them, to be boxers very early. And their career lasts this short. It's something we should find a plan of saying, how do we teach that value system in kids so that money does not become the attraction, but valuing themselves, understanding that they have to grow in the system, and then keep their careers longer. Remember, those kids are caught up early with a deficit in their nutrition in the system. Their bodies are not fully developed. They have not been eating properly. But as a department, we've now put a sports science directorate, which is a new directorate we started last year. That directorate of sports science is going to assist us with this talent, see how we nurture it, and begin to make sure that at provincial level, we work with the national academy, the provincial academy, so they can identify talent, begin to put it there, and see if it can be nurtured, and see how those kids grow. So by the time they hit their peak, they can sustain it over a longer period than the 2 years we are seeing at this point. I thought I should raise that and talk to that, and then allow the team to respond to the rest of the question, which directly affects them.
Thank you very much. Can we short them to the point?
Okay. Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I'll just give you a brief background on the conditional grant and how we started with the mass participation program. In 2004, we did a pre-study, you know, that would assist us with the baseline on how to increase participation in the communities, because what we discovered, we saw the you know, the participation level of our youth really declining in the communities, and we had to come up with a model that would really increase that participation in the communities, especially the poorest of the poor communities and the rural areas and the nodal areas. Those were the key areas that were identified in 2004. What we picked up from the pre-study was that facilities were there in the communities, but they were built like, you find others were like 15 kilometers away from the communities, and there was a lot of vandalism. Some of the facilities were really never used. They were white elephants. However, you know, we discovered that communities were never consulted when they built these facilities. And they were expected to walk 15 kilometers to go and participate in a game of basketball. I mean, you're not still walking 15 kilometers. By the time you get there, you're completely spent, you're tired, and you play your basketball and you still have to walk back. We then came up with the concept of hubs.
in the communities wanted to actually just come up with the hubs of activities within the communities. And a hub is any geographical space that is within 5 kilometer walking radius in the community. And we wanted communities to own these hubs, to be fully in charge and manage these hubs. So we came up with those with that concept, and we approached National Treasury, and Treasury was really quite helpful. They gave us 20 million in year one. And now, just to answer your question on the allocation of the funds to the provinces, when they gave us the money, and we're informed now by the pre-study, and we're able to actually establish the baseline. They said, Treasury said, no, we'll give you money for programs, but not to build facilities. So we had to come up with those programs that will keep our communities vibrant and active. So they gave us the 20 million, and we said we'll distribute 1 million to the provinces, and we'll keep the 11 million. So in year one, you'll find that everything was centralized. We did the training, the capacity building of the provinces, because they are our key stakeholders. You know, we had to really get that full buy-in from the provinces because they are responsible for implementation. So we gave them each this 1 million, and we kept the 9 million at national. So we did the training, and also the issue of equipment was actually procured at national. But now, you know, when you look at procurement issues, we sort of had problems because we did not have storage place for the equipment that was supposed to be distributed to the provinces. We then approached Treasury to say we want to decentralize the allocation of the grants now and the responsibilities to the provinces. And they agreed to that. So you'll find that in year two, the distribution was still in equal amounts. It was 2.47 to all the 9 provinces. And national kept back about 6 million. However, in year three, we had to come up with a different strategy because we discovered that in terms of the numbers in the provinces, provinces like Northern Cape, they have a population of about 1.2 million. And KZN, they have over 20, whatever number of people. I mean, I think about 4 or 5 million people. So we had to come up with the equitable share formula. However, when you look at the equitable share formula, they say Northern Cape is now less than a million. So now when you look at the equitable, when you look at the equitable share alone, we sort of realize that, okay, Northern Cape, well granted, they have 1.2 million people. But now if you look at the equitable share, they're going to end up with less than a million because you see the grant was increasing. And they have other challenges, you know, in terms of space and the distances. You know, you have to travel over 800 kilometers to move from one district to the next district. So we said, okay, we'll use two formulas, equitable share formula and a baseline. Now, what do we mean by baseline? We said, okay, they're giving us 150 million. Out of the 150, we're going to give each province 5 million just to make sure that a province like Northern Cape gets something and a decent allocation. So we'll take the 5 million out of the 149, you divide it equally, that's the baseline. That's 45 million out of the 149. And then the rest, you then use the equitable share formula to distribute to all the provinces. That's how the money was allocated to the So year one, it was equal amounts, year one and two, and then after that, it was equitable share plus baseline.
That's a fantastic idea.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we're going to be, please, don't get excited. I'm sharing with you. Further questions? I mean, answer, let's be short. We have 5 minutes.
Chairperson, I'll try and emulate
Mr.
my record in terms of presentation. Be very short. Yes, we will provide you with the list of schools as requested. Secondly, in terms of overseas volunteers, we will raise that with the Department of Education, but obviously you also have access to the department. But at the end of the day, what happens on schools' property is the Department of Education's primary responsibility. And I think that what we're also beginning to recognize there is a far greater need for coordination between ourselves and the Department of Education. So in terms of training, are we training the right people? Or are we training the educators who collect certificates? To put it very bluntly, and I'll probably get into trouble for it afterwards, but we need to ensure that there's proper coordination, including with the unions on that one. And the issue of taking talent out of the rural schools, we would need to look at, and perhaps members of the committee can have some thoughts on it as well and share it with us. We need to look at incentives to keep them in the rural areas, because if we don't have the models in the role models in the rural areas, then it's not going to help at the end of the day. So we'd appreciate some feedback from you. In terms of facilities in the rural areas, absolutely. And here I'm going to unambiguously lobby, because we're trying to get the Building for Sport and Recreation funding back from the MIG, from the MIG funding, because it really is, because of their formula, it is advantaging the urban and peri-urban areas and disadvantaging the rural areas and the smaller municipalities. So when a municipality gets 3 million rand for its whole MIG grant, it's really not going to get as far as sport and recreation facilities at all. So what we're trying to do is very clearly to get that funding back, so that we can actually put facilities of a multi-purpose nature in areas where they are needed, and sign agreements with the municipalities to say you are responsible for the maintenance thereof, otherwise you won't build it there. And in addition to that, you need program funding. Because there's no point in having a facility there unless you have programs and people to run those programs and those facilities. And that will then also add into the other areas of cooperation with education. If there's a school in the area which doesn't have a facility, then they need to be able to use a municipal facility and vice versa. And so we can optimize the use of facilities on that one. In terms of extending the school day, that is not a decision that we can take at all. And essentially education is telling us it's unrealistic at this time. But again, you may want to have discussions with education on that, and obviously they would need to discuss with the unions as well. In terms of training, we have offered to education, and they actually approached us initially, because we have some training materials from National Sports Council days. So we said to them, we're very happy to give that to you to use, and then we're very happy to make use of what resources that we have, not necessarily financial, to help with the training component. But we must also recognize that there is a wealth of experience within the school sector. Some of us can cast our minds back to the days when SACOS was around. And there are some excellent administrators from the SACOS days, and particularly involved in the school, that we need to try and entice back into the system. So that we need to make it a coordinated effort on that as well. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Is there any other thing?
Yes,
please.
Just quickly, I think the issue of funding has been raised a lot. And I think I would like to quote our minister here in our strategy plan. He says, as we plan, we also need to be extremely realistic. We must plan to achieve our set goals within the limiting parameters of the available resources. This, above all, means that we need to be conscious at all times that our hopes and ambitions together with those of our people are subject to financial reality. In short, in terms of funding, you ask, do we have enough money? Certainly not. And one of the areas we're dealing with through the leadership of the Director General and our strategic unit is to build up a case for sport so that sport can receive more funding, particularly really in trying to bring the synergy between the provinces and the municipalities in terms of the facilities, the coordination of programs, etc. So it will require additional funding. In terms of the approach, the rural areas, I think, yes, it's uppermost in everybody's mind. I think the DG has been continually saying, Biela, that project is not going to happen unless you begin your approach from outside to internally. But by the same token, we need to realize that internally, as in the city or urban areas, there are disadvantaged communities like the inner cities, for instance. We also need to take away, so we need that balance. And we are busy now with the policies, with the guidelines, etc. But most importantly, one of the things that we've budgeted for to get this year in the Mass Participation Program is stakeholder management. And we're putting in a substantial amount of money so that all the stakeholders involved can begin to talk the same language and to be able to streamline and cater for the needs. The issue of the disabled, the rural areas, is always going to be a challenge because of funding. But yes, we are in policy beginning to make inroads on that. The youth, Indeed, yes. We are doing as much as we can. The aged as well. You wanted to know what we're doing for them. There's a lot that has been done. In fact, one of the team that we like to always boast about is the Popo team for the aged, which we would really love to see that being emulated over we've talked of the one of the key areas to really do and address the issues of reaching out to the rural areas, dealing with the issues of transformation, is the model of MPP that we are revisiting. So that really right there at the base, we can begin to set up an assisting with this kind of values at the early age that the DG was talking about.
Thank you very much.
And then,
I think I'm not very sure what the truth is.
It's responding to questions that were raised.
Yes, and then
one more question. I'm responding.
You asked about the stipends. Yes, we pay 1,200 rands stipends per month to our volunteers. It's really not a salary, but it's one that says.
There's no need to pay. I think honorable members understand what the stipend is. It's not a salary.
That's the
good.
And then
any other answer?
Indigenous case?
Yes.
Yes, indeed. One of the things that we're doing is we've budgeted for the promotion of indigenous people. So that it reaches all areas. And then also monitoring and evaluation. Two things that have been done. Critically, well, I talked earlier on about presence in the provinces, that so that we can establishing regional offices is going to put us much more closer with the provinces. But also, we're doing a joint planning so that we polish our business plans, particularly Kelly's doing that. So that we know that we know exactly what to expect, they know exactly what to expect, and obviously capacity building. Yes, we are moving in that direction.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, the questions that you have, will the sky fall if you don't ask them?
Yes, ma'am. You see, Jefferson, through you. My end of the morning.
No, wait. I think this end of the morning.
I just want us to.
Then you will come, and then you.
If there are people to present, then we can do. There's one area that Jefferson, if you allow me, just to more say, of a request to you. If maybe let me put it, maybe can. From time to time, the department they will present issues of sports that touch on and what they can say, they want to do at school level, or what they intend doing. The department will say, when you meet them, they'll tell us about. Is it possible through Chesterfield that the two departments can do a joint presentation to us or a joint strategic plan so that now if they're failing to meet or converge at some point, we'll assist them to do so. Because there are a number of issues that are worked on silos here. Year in, year out, we are actually wasting resources. Mm-hmm. And not getting a headway in terms of a direction. Mm-hmm. And I think as a committee, we need to organize or plan such a meeting so that now out of that meeting, they are then able to form a task team, if need be, for them to take whatever we have agreed and worked on as a committee. So that particular team connects. Because issue of physical education, I mean, she said something, I have a different view. Because I come from physical education and other things in terms of how these things were done at school, whether there was not a curriculum or not. Chairperson, I'm just saying, I think there's a need that we need to have a joint sitting.
You have made your point. That's
please.
Where we
whether
that, for the that time issue time. Is our issue. We will actually deal
yeah,
with
okay.
ourselves.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. One important for physical education. One was around the, you see, the difficulties that we have faced with the agreement, because the facilities there are not sports facilities, are government facilities. The memorandum of understanding between the municipalities and the province is a problem. To what extent is the water school department engaging? You know, we appreciate the memorandum of understanding between the sports and the education, but I think important and necessary for local government and sport.
so that we are able to get those tests. The second issue is around the best model of a hub. Let's remember when I'm going to do oversight, what is it that I will expect, you know, from the hub point of view? If one can get a lens around that. Because Mali has been dumped and some months earlier, I attended the FLFC where there was that fiscal dumping of money because they couldn't utilize the money for the mass participation. But they end up sponsoring staff and all of those. Because of the particular
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Now, I will be short and to the point. You see, I'm thinking in terms of the department saying that funds are not enough. Now, we have the locker as well. And then schools and clubs and what have you apply for funds and funds have been given to them and things are happening and, you know, the departments in the provinces or nations are not even aware of this. So my question to the department is maybe rather of a political nature. I would like to hear what the thinking of the department as far as this net is concerned. Is it not about time that we revisit that act to give the Department of Sports a leverage or a better arm to be in charge of this whole sports processes and so on? It's just a question because funds is a problem for us. I don't have a problem with the lotteries, but I was just thinking about this. Thank you, Chair.
I think your point, mate. She's asked earlier on the DORA funding, because we had an argument, you said, this DORA funding. Can you explain what it is? Is it the equitable share that goes to the province? What is it?
No.
What DORA funding is? Division of Revenue Act. Do
yes.
you have a different view? You know, can you explain that as well? 5 minutes to do all those things, please.
Okay, DORA grant.
Yeah.
It's a grant that was supposed to be given to the department, some funds that are given to the department, of which the department then, because it's sitting at Pretoria, transfers to provinces to carry on our work. But what has been happening in the past, there was no alignment with the strategy between what the province does and what the department says.
Why DORA? Why call it DORA? DORA is Division of Revenue.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
DORA is a Division of Revenue Act.
Yeah.
Yes, as amended this year. There's a framework around it that we use for exactly what we want them provinces to do. It's just that the mistake in the past, we never insisted on guiding the province on how to use the funds.
Mm-hmm.
But this year now we've signed what we call the agreements, PI agreements, on what we are now collaborating on business plans. And business plans that are outside our strategy, we are now saying, no, these things we cannot do, which is why. No, it is a conditional grant.
It's a conditional grant,
yes, definitely.
Oh.
And therefore, being a conditional grant, it means the ring fence. We need to achieve
now,
it.
Now, we understand what the conditional grant
yes.
is. Fella, there was that question there and the Phyllis question.
Yes. Can I speak on this thinking in the department? Yes, we've already acted on it.
Mm-hmm.
We lobbying TCI and we hope members will assist us as well because they are the responsible for the act. But really what we're saying to the minister is that it's important that we run because the lotto gives 460 million every year, the distribution agency, on sport only. And you'll notice that there's double dipping. People get funds from the department, gets it from the lotto as well. So if the minister could be in charge of the distribution agency, of the lotto part, of the 460 million, he'll give us leverage actually. Because if you don't have that leverage, there's a lot of arrogance elsewhere. That we're giving them a little bit, but they're getting more from the lotto, so they don't have to account to us. So we are working on that already. Like the facilities one, we're busy at the moment on the MEEC, talking to the cluster. It's at the cluster level now. The discussion is at the cluster level. It's going to cabinet in July for decision on the returning of the MEEC fund back to sport.
An ideal hub?
Ideal hub.
Yes. And also just to give a brief clarity on the DORA and conditional grants, you know, all conditional grants are managed by that act, the Division of Revenue Act.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You wanted a perfect model of a hub. You said a hub is a geographical space, 5 kilometers within a community. And in a hub, you know, we encourage communities to actually articulate their needs, to tell us activities that they want. However, in some areas you find that, you know, there is a river or maybe there is a dam within a community, but they will not identify, you know, swimming as an activity. So that's where we come in as a department to say you need a Learn to Swim program. You need to educate this community around the dangers of crossing the river when it's overflowing, and we bring that Learn to Swim program to that community. So, you know, you'll find that the activities will differ from community to community. We have a menu of activities there on page 2. You'll find that in one half we have football, basketball, indigenous games, aerobics. Another half you have different activities altogether. You have rugby, cricket, Learn to Swim, volleyball, other halves. So, you know, activities will differ from province to province. Now, on the issue of SAFA, you know, we have found that provinces, especially affluent provinces, provinces like Gauteng, that really get a lot of money from Equitable Share. You know, the grant is like an addition. You know, they just, that's what we have picked up, that they really do not take it seriously. So as a result, what they do is come financial year end, they want to dump this money. And it's a challenge. And you know, they're not complying with the act, and it's wrong. So if you pick such activities, because you see, in terms of monitoring, we cannot be all over. Please let us know, because they'll be heavily penalized for doing that. Because
yes.
The act is clear.
You were not supposed to do that. Because of time, and we are not being fair
to
the doctor there, you know. We are not being fair to him. And I'm very sorry also that at the end we had to rush you in the manner we did, but it's because it's agreed that we're going to finish at a particular time. Maybe it's because you've not started on time. It is our fault, really. It's our fault when we not started on time. The department was here, I mean, ready, I mean, at 9:30. Once again, our apology. I want to then say thank you very much, Department of Sports and Recreation. This is not our last interaction. We will definitely interact again on many other issues. We can also interact again on this very issue, maybe before the end of this financial year, if a need arises.
Mm.
So I want to take this opportunity to thank you very much for the presentation you have made. I think we are better than when we came into this room, in terms of understanding that which you are doing as a department, and we can only wish you well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Honourable members, we are now going to get into, but just give them some few minutes to just, check their things. Culture, what in my in my mind, the Department of Arts and Culture for being with us here today. When we interacted with the department on the strategic plan and budget for this financial year 2008-2009, I don't remember, still had some questions on libraries. Then it was agreed in that meeting that maybe we need a separate presentation on libraries. And we must say that at some stage, I think even last year too, there was that undertaking that we have an engagement on libraries. But unfortunately, we could not. But I'm happy then that this time around, we are able to engage on libraries and libraries alone, not being contaminated with other things coming out of the department. So that we are zeroed on the question of libraries. I don't know who is heading this department. Is it Dr. Blooming? Or who is doing it? Yourself? Okay. I will then, I don't know if I have to introduce one of the members. I think they are known. I don't know how many members are known. And I will never call upon the department to do the presentation. We know her. Maybe you should just introduce gentlemen here and the ladies on your arm. You can get
only in a very
DAC.
He is
on the list. As long as he is. I don't hear the C on the list. I just see on the little silence. That's why KJ was excited. Thank you very much. The meeting is on. We are in a meeting, please. We are in a meeting.
Thank you, Chairperson, and as you yourself said, I'm Graham Domini. My title in law is the National Archivist of South Africa, but the component I head in the Department of Arts and Culture includes National Archives, Heraldry, and Libraries. And I'm here in the latter capacity to report to this Honourable Committee on the progress for the Community Library Conditional Grant funding. Before I start, Honourable Chairperson, I would like to perhaps take you back. I think it's almost 3 years now, maybe a little bit longer, when I came to support Professor Seth Manaka coming to this committee to talk about the work of the National Council of Library and Information Services. And at that meeting, the lack of funding for community libraries was highlighted. And the committee pledged its full support for efforts to get additional funding. The additional funding is now on stream, and I would like to express my appreciation to the committee for the sterling effort that the committee put in, the lobbying that it did for us to get this funding for community libraries. Thank you very much indeed on behalf of the department and also on behalf of the library sector. The support of the committee is greatly appreciated. There are two documents, Honourable Chairperson. The first one is the document that's on the screen. It's a PowerPoint presentation. And then in addition, there is a background document which deals at greater detail with specific library programs and projects in the various provinces, which I won't have time to go through, but Honourable Members can look at and ask questions on. I'll go through the first slide quite quickly because I think the committee is well aware of the background that libraries are an exclusive provincial legislative competence in terms of the Constitution Schedule 5, that before 1994 and before the year 2001, there were the four old provincial library services divided into nine, and that under that dispensation, up until the time of the passing of the municipal legislation giving effect to Schedule 5 powers, it had been run as a shared service between provinces and local authorities. The advent of the municipal legislation meant that funding for libraries was in jeopardy because it was regarded in many places as an unfunded mandate. The provincial situation, provincial library services are departments of sports and culture, or in the case of KZN, culture and tourism. Very, very few provinces have enacted their own library legislation, and some still rely on the old pre-1994 legislation of provinces such as Orange Free State, Transvaal, Cape, and Natal. I'm giving the old title to the province. Orange Free State, Transvaal, Cape, and Natal. And whether they have any validity left in law is exceptionally doubtful. And using, I mean, this, they provide no support whatsoever for the transformation that is seriously needed in the sector. When the National Treasury informed the department that it was going to be making a conditional grant for community libraries, it gave us a small grant in the year 2006-2007 of 5 million rand to actually investigate what was actually happening on the ground, because we had no baseline. We went on tender and appointed KPMG and Jacaranda Intellectual Property Consortium, and they produced us three reports which are now available on our website. Number one is the survey of immediate needs. This is so we could begin to develop plans to extend the grant from the beginning of the 2007-08 financial year. The second one was a more detailed study of the status quo of the libraries in the country. And the third one, the third report gave us a funding model and norms and standards for how to go forward. I'll just gloss over this one because it repeats some of the earlier slides. The first bullet is the one I'll begin with. Needs assessment in terms of the KPMG first report revealed the priorities and determined the formula for distribution of 07-08 funds, which came to 200 million rand, of which 180 million was distributed to provinces and 20 million was top slice for national project management, coordination and promotion. The provinces played a significant role themselves in determining the priorities for the expenditure in the first year of the grant. The second phase of their report was the status quo report, and they visited all provinces and 50% of all the municipalities in the country, and undertook a detailed examination of provincial and municipal expenditure patterns, and noted that between the priorities as identified in local authorities and in provinces, there was great similarity. Their findings were that in the long term, we should fold, I think they use the word fold, the conditional grant into the equitable share, subject to demonstrable capacity of a province to manage the project. They recommend that the problem between the provinces and the local authorities could be got around by executive assignment by the MPC, and that the role of the national department would be to set national norms and standards and serve with Section 44 of the Constitution. Now I'll move on to the funded, the community grant itself. The National Treasury has emphasized to the department that the 1 billion rand is not replacement funding. That is a hotly contested area. Before KPMG did its investigation, the last figures we had were from about the year 2000 and indicated at that stage that across the municipalities of the whole province, of the whole country, and the national department, plus the nine provinces, approximately a billion rand per annum was spent on libraries as a whole. So now this grant gives 1 billion rand over 3 years. So there's no way that it is taking up in one fell swoop all the expenditure of municipalities. But it is intended, so it is intended to gradually fill this gap between dwindling municipal funding and the needs of the community and sort of the ability of the provinces to get up on the The important consequence of this approach is that it is not intended to enable provincial departments to divert the funds they are constitutionally required to spend on libraries for other purposes. I'm going to give an example now because I'm not actually pointing a finger. There is actually a very, very valid reason for it. Northwest Province, for example, has cut the money that they were before this grant came that the province was spending on libraries. And it's not out of malice of forethought, I think is a legal or police term. It's because of the constitutional boundary changes of the province have led to a budget shortfall in the province. But generally speaking, this is not intended for provinces. The provinces are constitutionally required to deliver the service, therefore they must budget for it in equitable share. This funding is supplementary, not replacement. The critical thing about this program, Chairperson and Honourable Members, is that we are determined to transform the sector by promoting a culture of reading, using libraries as an important vehicle for promoting social cohesion, shared family activities, peer group networks, libraries and civil rights. For example, reading promotes critical thinking, which is essential for the growth of a democracy. The last two points are also absolutely critical. Libraries and IT. These days you can't get by books alone, and the project has a significant component in it for rolling out ICT in community libraries in rural areas to promote access to the internet for particularly young learners. And the other most important thing to underpin the development of a reading culture is to be able to provide reading material in indigenous languages. The sooner a child learns to read and to enjoy reading, the more likely the child is to read throughout his or her lifetime. They will learn to read at school, but they will learn to read in a way that enables them to pass exams. And they won't read for pleasure or to promote awareness of various things. Therefore, it's essential to begin with the provision of reading material, especially for small children in indigenous languages, which means that the department is also working, as you recall from the minister's budget speech, on promoting publishing in indigenous languages. To drive the process of transformation of the library sector and to promote the community, the conditional grant, and to encourage participation in the whole LIS sector, we have begun a process of adopting a library transformation charter. It's an inclusive and consultative process designed to result in broad support for the transformed role of libraries. It will be tabled to Minnet, Parliament, and critically to SALGA, who we regard as an important stakeholder. The process is being driven by the National Council of Library and Information Services, which is now headed by Professor Rocky Rala, VP Similela. Professor Manaka has retired to ill health. And the National Library of South Africa is driving it on behalf of the department. And may I say, just as an aside, Chairperson, the public hearings are for the Western Cape are actually being held in Cape Town today. If any honourable members are able to attend, I'm sure they would be. Their presence would be greatly appreciated. It's at the Centre of the Book, which is in Queen Victoria Street, a couple of blocks from here. Others. Emphasize the question of indigenous languages a little more. I've talked about the need to supply literature in all official languages, especially for young readers. How we do this, at the moment the National Library of South Africa is driving a process to identify indigenous language publications and to reprint African language classics. They have already published one catalogue of works in African languages and are working on a volume two. It's called Writing in Nine Tongues. And the provincial libraries are finding it very useful to assist them with purchasing material from under the conditional grant. One thing that this grant is doing, the publishing industry will turn to you and they will say, we're not publishing in indigenous languages because there's no market. They'll publish a textbook in isiZulu because the education department is going to buy 50,000 copies. But they won't publish a novel in isiZulu because they say no one will buy it. By having funds to enable community libraries to buy, you are beginning to create a market, and hopefully people will then buy of their own back to keep it at their home, as well as get it out of the library. And thus, we want to encourage independent publishing in the medium term. The way forward. We are managing the project at the moment in the second year of the conditional grant. One of the most important things is to increase provincial capacity to manage the project. You will see when I come to the expenditure slide where the problems are with provinces lacking capacity, and to harmonize contributions between the national, provincial, and local sphere. While municipalities might turn to us and say, this is an unfunded mandate, the fact is, on the ground, there are buildings in municipal areas which were built with revenue from those municipalities and their taxpayers that are municipal assets and owned by them. So they have a responsibility. They can't walk away from the responsibility for libraries. They are essentially a community service, and local government is the sphere of government closest to communities. One of the technical problems in administering the grant is relates to procurement. And we are trying to reconcile provincial procurement requirements and project compliance requirements and deliverables. That's a whole lot of long words. Let me try and give you some examples. Each province has a provincial procurement policy, and by and large they say that you must try and procure goods and services from within the province and according to government policy, BEE, etc., etc., etc. This is fine for provinces like Western Cape, KZN, and Gauteng, which is where, in this sector, the publishers are. It's very difficult for a province like Northwest and Popo, Mpumalanga, or even Free State, because the publishing houses are not in those provinces. So we are trying to set up mechanisms whereby they can comply with their provincial requirements and still obtain the services that are necessary. National monitoring and evaluation. The project has been well supported by the Treasury's Technical Assistance Unit, which has sent monitoring teams to all provinces, particularly the three problem provinces, which your colleague, Chairperson, the Chair of the Select Committee on Finance in the NCOP, Public Finance, described as the ICU provinces. And then we are currently drafting a South African Public and Community Libraries Act, which we hope to table in Parliament tomorrow. We are on tender at the moment to find a service provider to draft the Act. This will take up the norms and standards recommended by KPMG and will also, as with the Library Transformation Charter, be widely consulted. If I may also refer to the Select Committee on Finance, there's a lot of seeming in that committee that it would be unwise to abandon a conditional grant too soon. And with due respect to the colleagues who spoke to this committee before I did, a conditional grant for sports and recreation facilities resulted in an improvement in sports and recreation facilities in provinces and rural areas. But as soon as the funding was given to provinces under equitable share, those facilities began to deteriorate. And your Select Committee on Public Finance is wants us to guard against that. Hence, we are trying now to do it through legislation. I hope this slide is visible. This is the expenditure until the end of December in the 2007-2008 financial year. The Eastern Cape spent that 9 months into the year 15.3% of the total. Free State 48.7%, Gauteng 70.5%, KZN 62.9%, Limpopo 14%, Mpumalanga 49.3%, Northern Cape 48.9%, Northwest 22%, and the Western Cape 48%. There was a distinct improvement by the end of the financial year. Eastern Cape, unfortunately, was still under 50%, 46.3%. Free State, 98.7%. Gauteng, 98.2%. KwaZulu-Natal, 100% and 1%. I don't know if that's an extra 1 rand they bought tea with or what. Limpopo 55.9, Mpumalanga got up to 98.7, Northern Cape to 90.6, Northwest to 71.9, and Western Cape to 100.3. Overall then, across the country, the expenditure was 82.6%. We withheld the fourth quarter grant from Eastern Cape, Northwest, and Limpopo, because it was very clear to us that they would not spend them. Those grants will be returned to the provinces within the 3 year of the NCEF. So they will not lose it. It will be returned to Northwest within the current financial year, 8-9, and to the other two, Eastern Cape and Limpopo, within the year 9-10. That's our proposal to National Treasury. You will see that by the end of the financial year, Northwest has moved from ICU status to a general ward and even to convalescence at home. they certainly, I give my compliments to Northwest, they improved. They're working exceptionally hard in a very dedicated way to improve. This last slide is the grants for the current year, sir. You will note that amounts are set. The total grant this year is 338 million rand, of which the Eastern Cape is getting 42 million, 42.5. Free State 30.927. Gauteng 35. KwaZulu-Natal 36. Limpopo 42. Mpumalanga 42. Northern Cape 45. Northwest 40 and Western Cape 31. We're coming to the total of 338. Chairperson, this is at variance with the formula in terms of which the equitable share is calculated. And it has been based on the research done by KPMG and Jacaranda Intellectual Property. And the formula has been tweaked to advantage rural provinces and advantage the Northern Cape in particular, because they are their disadvantaged status is complicated by the vast area and low population.
Very good news.
And when you are trying to provide a service, you heard from our colleagues in Sports and Recreation that you should have something within 5 kilometers, and 15 is the problem. You're dealing with hundreds of kilometers around here. So they have to invest in things such as mobile libraries, which has a higher operational cost. I'll stop there, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doctor. I remember you've been with me. You now have to listen to you in terms of questions and comments. First hand that I see is that of the Honourable Jane, followed by Honourable Zikani. Those are the two hands for now. Yeah, now there are two other hands here, and Google and Matilda. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I also want to thank you for the presentation. We'll have more time today to listen, because this is something that is really at our heart. Chairperson, maybe I need to start by saying we need to start to relocating people to Northern Cape. So that now we depopulate that province, so that now.
As from stage, I remember the former Speaker of the Northern Province asked Trevor Manuel to say he must get more funds when there was no money. Trevor responded in Afrikaans and said, "There is good."
Now we've got Nguni Bulls now.
Jefferson, I just want to check some few things from the presentation here, particularly on the recommendation that deals with the long-term funding. When you talk about the conditional grant, I just want to check whether you are still planning to do it, or is something that is ongoing already in process. Because I wasn't sure whether this element of classifying this grant as conditional grant was not done in the past, but if it was done, just clarify me on that element. And then, where conditional grants have been provided, if they were done previously, and the province has somewhat used the money elsewhere, what remedies have they used then? Because if it's a conditional grant, it must remain like that. Spend where it's supposed to go. You know, I don't know whether I was listening to the radio or what, but something where it was talking about the provision of publication. Either you'll correct me, but I think you're touching on it. Where publications in your additional languages, there's some indication to say, give us, I don't know whether that it was a radio, if it was a Tovela, I'll be fine. But it looks like to me, it was more of an English speaking station. But correct me, if this covers all of the radio stations, because I was worried to say this information, or, you know, if it's in English, it might actually not fall onto the areas where they're supposed to, but they just clarify me on that as well. Now, you talk about libraries and IT, the connectivity in the rural areas. There's something that is missing. There's this element that is called your community. I don't know whether I'm going to use the right word, but they're building centers where communities can actually access government, what do they call them? Multi-purpose centers. And whether that concept of the multi-purpose centers, because where there are no infrastructure in terms of building, my understanding is that such infrastructure will be put in there, like your home affairs, and whether there is any plan or a thinking to couple this with those multi-purpose centers, because I assume they are put where the communities have easy access. I just want to check if that is there. But also on your IT, where you say the connectivity in rural areas will bring the digital divide, I accept that. But is there any plan of a rollout? Because it's a problem. We can think of something, but if we're not really in the immediate short term, have a plan to say this is how we're going to deal with it. Chairperson, there's also an issue of supply of literature where big printers, or whatever you call them, are not willing to provide to print stock which is very limited. They want big stock. I'll also do the same if I'm a business person. I'll want to print where I'm going to do more money, make more money. I know there's this thing of rights, what do you call them? Books that can only be printed by certain printers. If I'm the author, I then give those rights to. Because I was of the idea that if you've got a government printer, but with this particular law, you can't. But I'm just saying that now there is a possibility, a need, where in Northern Sotho you need a certain number of books you put in your library, but when you check the number of the libraries where you need to put this book, it doesn't give you the quantity that you're looking for. What mechanisms do we have in those situations where you have no choice of printing more, but you only can print that small that is needed in that particular language? The last one, Chairperson, for now, is that municipalities like you have in Limpopo that are very rural, they don't even have a single library. I mean, in terms of your fiscal structure, or even any plan to say, I want to know what is that? How can they be assisted? Because if I come from Capricorn, two of the municipalities don't even have a library. Arnang local municipality, Bloberg local municipality, not a single library is available in those municipalities. Is there a way in which some special effort can be made rather than taking money to a province which will actually have its priorities not concerning those municipalities at this national level to say, well, we have seen these municipalities and this municipality do have a point of attraction, we can put a library there. And the last one. Just as in there are schools that we have physical buildings for libraries. And those schools have had supply of books when I was still a student there. You can imagine when you see my DHD white and my HD white, how long that is. But those libraries are there with all stock of books. You know, in those constituencies where we can, is there a possibility through you if we can request you to replenish those libraries? Because I believe that even if you've got a computer, there's a limitation. But your hardcore books to study, because the culture of reading is not there in rural areas. Remember, it was never encouraged in the past. We're still perpetuating it now by not providing. I'm asking, because some of us have got those places where we can ask you to say, this school doesn't have that. The facilities are there, the space is there, but there are no books. Maybe you can be half a little bit like that.
Next one, on the line.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, I wanted to know from the department, is there any assistance? Because when I say the Eastern Cape, always understand, is there anything that the department can assist? Because if you look at the Eastern Cape, there are no libraries even at schools. If you go down to Port St. Johnson rural areas, there are learners, they can't even know what is the provincial newspaper, that is the daily dispatch, what is kind of it. So is there any plan that the department can assist the rural areas? Thanks, Chairman.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think I have much to say.
No, the next one I don't think about you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think let's welcome the input from Dr. Graham and actually appreciate that we've long been asking about the presentation. I think it's actually outlining the challenges that they are facing. But I think at some stage, Chairperson, maybe we need to have a meeting with the council, the Library Council, Chairperson. But I'm sure that after we put in place the education, we're able to set up that council. And I've never even seen the annual report, nor anything that comes from there to say what work are they actually doing in relation to issues like ours. And so if that can be noted, that maybe we need to meet with them at some stage and even get the annual report, if not annual report, because they've long put them in place. And whether have they ever gone to like your educators and others, they usually have a time for re-election. And I don't remember the department coming to us and say, it's time for the office to maybe to replenish whether the members are still there, how many of them are dying, how many are still functioning, and all those things. And then number two, Chairperson, I think you also touched on the issue of libraries being a provincial competence. and which is really a serious, serious challenge, because you find even local municipalities that do assist in libraries, they agree through memorandum of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And you find the local municipality will budget more than the province budget for libraries. And it is a very serious challenge. I mean, municipalities that are metro, you find their budget is more than the budget of the province, and then the province has to take care of the rest of the province. So even the, that huge financing is still the excessive. If a town state, maybe they can also supply us with information of how many stocks. When I say stocks, I say how many libraries we have in the whole of South Africa. And if are really missing the challenge of the population, and if possible, they will give us it breakdown province by province. I mean, province. So meaning now they will be counting physical structures, whether they belong to a municipality or to a province, but bottom line, it is a provincial competency line, which is what the constitution is saying. And Jefferson, I am sure that on the issue of life hours, the situation is whereby, you know, there are these beautiful models that we found in Brazil, where you find even facilities in schools are also used by communities.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'm sure I'm talking alone. I didn't request the car. Eastern Cape. That's my colleagues in Popo and in Auckland. Last point, Chair, I also want to thank the department. Indeed, under Tony Metropolitan Municipality, this library has been handed over to community. Mr. Fett and Carol Grower, we received them as part of the constituency. And thank the department for their help. Seeing the arrangement, Mr. Fett being very, very big area since 1960, people moved in that area. Only one library, just a drop in the ocean. Between the university there, of the Popovic Medusa and Dr. Mukaro Hospital. Looking the area, they got more than 40 years. And that library, it's okay. It's a forum town, but it's better than nothing. But we are requested for more. Thank you.
I mean, that honorable members are actually talking on behalf of their province. They are beginning to do what they are sent here instead of being in general attempt, as if they are national attempt. You know, good. Can you, no response is going to come. You will come after the response, all of you. Nobody is going to be there.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The question of long-term funding is the first issue that was raised. The conditional grants, will they continue, and what are the remedies if provinces use money elsewhere? The National Treasury is relatively pleased with the progress that is being made currently and has indicated that the conditional grant will continue beyond the end of the current MTEF, which is 2011 in the case of this grant, 2010-2011 being the last year. So we will get another 3 years' worth. We envisage being able to say that if a province can demonstrate capacity, then it could come off the conditional grant and have the money put in equitable share, provided it meets certain things that we will lay down in the normal standard legislation. But that would be done in a phased way. It wouldn't be a one-size-fits-all at the beginning of a financial year with all nine provinces going to equitable share. It would be done as a province demonstrates its ability to manage the program. What are the remedies if a province uses money elsewhere? We have not yet found that sort of abuse of a grant in the first year, which is 2007-2008. I'm using my words very cautiously here. What we found is they have not spent rather than they've spent on something else. Where there is a potential problem is that certain provinces transfer the money over to municipalities to spend on their behalf. And therefore it looks good on the books, but we still have to monitor and see that the municipalities are spending that money correctly. The province that came out top in the expenditure with a sort of 100% on the button and three cups of tea was Western Cape. And the reason they did that is because they transferred all the money to local authorities for paying the purposes of paying salaries. Because previously the libraries had been closing down and their visitor hours were shorter, and by being able to pay for re-employing people, they were able to reopen libraries, etc. But we are, in terms of monitoring the evaluation, looking very carefully at how the municipalities are spending. And in fact, we are appointing we have approval from the Director General to appoint three coordinators and monitors. We'll start with three. We haven't yet worked out whether there will be one for three provinces, or there will be two to look at the worst provinces, and a third one to look at the non-problematic provinces. The second question related to Indigenous language publications and the advertisements that the Honourable Member heard on the radio. This is a project of the National Library, using some of the top flight conditional grant money to elicit from the members of the public the names of publications in indigenous languages which need to go into volume 2 of the catalogue of publications in indigenous languages. You may have heard it in English, but it has been broadcast in all 11 official languages. ICT connectivity. There is definitely a rollout plan. If you look at the supplementary document, there will be details in there of some information about where they are being distributed. What I'd like to say on this project is we are trying to align the rollout with the Presidential National Commission on Information Society and Development, the PNC on ISAD, which is co-chaired by our Director General, Mr. Wakashi, and the Director General of Communications. The policy, the cabinet-approved policy, is that we roll it out in within the range or the footprint of the Dinaledi School, where in terms of this project, they are getting the equipment to make wireless connectivity within the range. There might be a better technical word than range. I hope you understand what I'm trying to get at. So let us say that there's a school in Kharagpur that has been identified by the Department of Education as a Dinaledi school. It will get the transmitter or the satellite connection. It will have its computers in the school, and within, say, a 10-15 kilometer radius of that school, in an area like Kharagpur, which is relatively flat, it could be up to 15 kilometers. You will be able to connect all libraries, all other schools, all health centers, all museums, etc., etc. There is, I know of Dinaledi schools in Pretoria Central, in Tshwane Metro, where I suppose they are Dinaledi schools because they are advantage schools, but then you would connect all the libraries, and you'd find because of the hills, the Khalisberg that way, and then the range, that you'd get, say, 10 kilometers going east and west, but only 2 kilometers going north and south. But that is to be implemented before the end of December this year. Copyright issues on publishing in indigenous languages. Copyright is a serious problem. The legislative competence rests with the Department of Trade and Industry, which monitors intellectual property. We found it a particular problem in relation to reproducing work for the blind, because there you are changing the format. You're not just reproducing a book. You have to reproduce it in Braille or in audio form. But the Library of the Blind is working very hard on that. And I heard recently, but not officially, but just a conversation in the corridor from its director, that they are achieving a breakthrough there. So I look forward to further detail. What I can say is that they are rolling out the equipment into community libraries so that visually impaired people can get access to their material in their local libraries, rather than having to write and wait for stuff to be posted from the Library of the Blind in Grahamstown. As far as the copyright for translations is concerned, National Library is dealing with that as part of its republication project. The fifth question was on municipalities, for example, in Limpopo. How do we assist with constructing libraries? The provinces have worked with the municipalities and the stakeholder communities to identify priorities for construction. In the first year of the grant, we did not encourage the building of libraries, partly because we know that with building operations there are inevitable delays. And we were afraid that we would have problems with spending the money in the first year. We allowed it in one case in the Free State, and I think one case in Mpumalanga, where they were already plans approved, so they could spring in immediately and begin building. However, the second year of the grant, there will be a lot more libraries built, and that's a key to the transformation of the sector. The question of school libraries has been touched on by more than one honourable member, and I think I'll deal with the issue comprehensively in one response. The National Department of Education is busy with the development of a reading policy, which will be finalized, I believe, next month. So it's strongly in progress. They have recently appointed a new director who is dealing with school libraries and reading. Before this, we did not have a proper point to connect with the NE on this issue. There were discussions at high level with the deputy director, Phil Becker, but she has now managed to get a dedicated unit to work on it. So we will be working very closely, and I was listening earlier to the request that perhaps there should be a joint presentation by education, sports and recreation. I would say at the moment it's premature for us to do it, but perhaps next year we would be able to come to you together with the Department of Education and say this is how we are working together. The point was made about Brazil, and it's also very valid in Cuba, that we want to be able to share the facilities wherever as possible. And there are some very good examples of how it has been done, but they are too few and too far between. You have, for example, is it the job of the community library to stock textbooks? Our view is they should not stock textbooks. What they should do is stock supplementary reading material for the enrichment of the subject. One area where we are looking at the cooperation with education is in literacy. How the Department of Education is making a mass push to promote literacy, where would community libraries come in? And in the initial discussions, we are looking at supporting and sustaining it. The problem with the literacy program is that once if the people fall off and they don't keep applying the reading skills. And if you can structure it so that once they've learned the literacy in the school, they can sustain it in the community libraries, you're getting a win-win situation. The question of the underspending in the Eastern Cape and how can we help in the rural areas, I think the Eastern Cape is still in the ICU situation. What we are going to do is I think one of our three people involved in monitoring and evaluation will go and be virtually dedicated to the Eastern Cape. The Treasury Assistance Unit is also very carefully engaged in trying to improve the expenditure, and they did a big job in trying to get the expenditure at least brought up to nearly 50% before the end of the year. And the Treasury also has an infrastructure development unit which will assist us with the building and construction of libraries in rural areas. The example I think was given at Port St. John. Because in many cases, part of the problem with the understanding comes that you are, as the Department of Sports and Culture, dependent on the provincial Department of Public Works to actually implement a project such as that because the local rural municipality lacks capacity to do it. So Treasury is going to intervene there. The question of why there was underspending in the first year, I think it's because it's a new grant and a startup. Many things have to be put in place. In most instances, you have to get MOUs signed between the provinces and the municipalities. And that could take up to 6 months. And only then can you give the municipality funding to spend and then be monitored and evaluated in terms of the MOU. Because 6 months is there because councils only meet once a month. If they miss a council meeting, then it takes 2 months and so on. But the systems, I think, are now in place, and the problem will be reduced significantly in 7 provinces, and we hope that we will get that right in all 9. Yes, NCIS has certainly tabled 1, if not 2, of its annual reports. We will ensure that it is tabled them all, and that Professor Rada Diti comes to do a presentation in due course. I'll inform her. Are the libraries meeting the challenges of the nation? That's the critical question, and it was phrased in terms of a provincial competency issue, which is a very good way of doing it, because we are one state, we are a developmental state, and we need to make sure that our constitution enables us to reach that end. And I hope that we will be able to do that by setting the right standard in our norms and standards bill. I'm just going to jump right to the end of the question to the Honourable Member then. She asked about user fees. That's an extremely important point. It was previously used as a method of excluding disadvantaged people from attending a livelihood to then in predominantly white areas. And it's one of the standards we will set that there must be free access to libraries. Now, you may have to grade that because a book is an asset, and you need to have and money has been spent on it, and you need to be able to make sure that if it is lost, there can be a cost recovery of some sort or another. But previously, the libraries would say, we have 20,000 users. What they mean by 20,000 users, that would be a big library, is that those are people who come in and they borrow a book, they have paid a membership fee, they are a registered ratepayer, and they have fixed property. That means they're advantaged. The libraries must serve the disadvantaged people to help with community upliftment. The provincial libraries have agreed that their user statistics is going to be changed. And part of the transformation process, we're going to make sure the new libraries provide sufficient space for study there, and that we count the heads of the people who come in to study there. And they would never be charged a user fee if they are using the facilities there. Sharing of facilities between schools and libraries, I refer to what we try to work out with education, and this is one of the key areas of cooperation. For example, if there are 5 schools in a rural area within a certain radius, it might make sense to build 1 community library rather than 5 school libraries. Or to have 1 school with a community library that can be used by the public after hours. And the legislation, isn't it too late? It is possibly too late for this year. We hope, in fact, to introduce it during the year 2009. I think I've dealt with the reasons for the underspending in the first year. This is the final member's question. And I note her comments about the Northwest Province. I think Northwest Province has really tried exceptionally hard to turn around and master the difficulties in the spending. And it is an example for Limpopo and for Eastern Cape to how they've managed to achieve it. The reason for underspending I've dealt with, and the Tshwane Metro improvements, yes, we are encouraging, and Gauteng Province is particularly encouraging the metro to spend in their previously marginalized areas. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Let me take the second round of questions.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I see here on one of these notes, it says that there are 54 container libraries in the Northern Cape. I would like the department to give me information as to which towns are those libraries. That was the reason why I want that information. And then second, the Chair, in the briefing notes, it refers to Ordinance 20 of 1994. I think that is the one that is applicable in my province for now. Now, I know we at the national level can't really do anything about it, but I think we need to assist our provinces because Ordinance 20 of 1994 is in actual fact unconstitutional. It comes from a previous regime. I would like to know from the department, what are you prepared to assist our provinces? Because it relates to municipalities and so forth and so on. And we are faced with some challenges as far as this particular ordinance is concerned. Then, Chair, on the question of provinces, only few provinces have got their own library legislation or act in place. Is it not again a question of provinces that don't have the capacity to develop their own legislation? And if that is the case, is the National Department prepared to go and assist these provinces? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Next one.
Thank you. Thank you. Most of my questions were answered. Mine were on the rail book. Coming from Wilson, we have the Pioneer publishers that do the rail book. And the second one was any programs in place to create awareness of libraries in communities where communities cannot get aware that they can use libraries, libraries are nearby. And how does this impact on their constitutional right to access to public information if they need to pay fees? Audio visual materials for visually disabled people. Is that also in the pipeline for libraries? And then IT facilities, ICT systems and facilities need to be maintained when they are installed in libraries. Do you create a branch of maintaining those equipment? Mobile units have worked very well for departments of home affairs and even for SOSA. What is the department's view on mobile units, especially for the remote rural areas? And I remember in the days gone by we had mobile units service in the areas. Thank you.
Next one.
Thank you, Chair President. I want to know what is the train like, and another thing, I would like to say on behalf of Broadway, I'm happy I see that there are many libraries, and the one in town, I know it is next to me. So I would like to thank the department, but more so to thank those who need the budget to be implemented in the way.
Let me just talk about one question as well, you know, maybe the comment. My worry is that this whole problem of, you know, we're talking about libraries. We're not talking about how we're going to address this whole question of the culture of reading. Well, in the country, that culture is not there at all. The majority of our people are not in that culture. You know, you get jealous sometimes when you get to come and go to your country. You get in the train, you find out everybody got a book. Everybody has a book. You know? So that type of a culture, I really think, I'm not sure whether we'll be able to reach that level where we can be able to say we are now an English. But also, I'm not challenged because we're now living at this the scientific and technological revolution type of a world where there's IT, you know. When a person needs some information, you just keep something on this thing and then get the information, you know. And therefore, nothing encourages a person to go to a library because you want to get certain information, you want to get to know certain things. And then because there's on the computer, click there the information, there is the information, you find no thing. Now, are we going to succeed really? When there is this other thing of technology on the other side, and we want to go back to this whole question of
or
in front of him or her. Yeah, or her. It's gender sensitive. Thank you. Now, I don't know whether, because libraries are in municipalities in the mainland, they were actually looked like, and, you know, budgeted for by municipalities before. You talk about some ordinances or something and the like. Well, I know in my area, for instance, we have libraries that are, you know, local municipalities responsible for it and the like. But when you had a situation where these functions were now reassigned to provinces, then the municipalities started to say, aha, we don't want to sponsor. The province must now come on board and be able to pay for that. You see? But what's your view? Do you think that the assignment of this function, what was it correct, really, for this field to be assigned to provinces, when initially it was municipalities? Is it not possible, I mean, to look at the situation where this function can be actually reassigned? What do you think about that, you know, of the province? Especially those municipalities that are rich, like, let's say, for instance, Transnet, Do you really, from what you're saying, do you really expect the foreign to pay for a library or through your original share of, I don't know how much, you know, very tiny amount of money, going into a province that deals in billions, you know, it becomes a problem. It's not for them to say, let that function go straight to the municipality, guard or guild with this whole question. And then perhaps the conditional grants that would come from national authorities go to rural municipalities, you see. Rural municipalities, then you'll have, you know, sizable amount of money going to rural municipalities to deal with this question, rather than spending the money even to municipalities that they are able to afford. Now, I'm from state, I don't know whether you or Professor Manaka, who are saying librarians are actually aging in the country. You see, they're aging, they're old, the profession is almost lucrative, and we need to train new librarians. What is the situation now? Are you able to succeed in training new librarians, young people who take over from the old women and old men who are actually in our libraries today, you know? Those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll take them in the order that they were asked. The first question concerns container libraries in Northern Cape. I will have to go back to the province and request the information, and we will provide it in writing to the Secretary of the Committee. Thank you. There was a launch a few months ago of a container library, but unfortunately I was unable to attend it. I think I was actually here for the National Assembly Portfolio Committee that day. The Honourable Member has raised the question of these ordinances quite pertinently, because it's a serious problem. And he asked, do provinces lack capacity, why there is no legislation? That's not always the case. It's partly because of this, I'm going to use the metaphor, the elephant in the room. The elephant in the room is the municipal expenditure. Which the chairperson came to a little bit later when he asked the big question about the culture of reading. Limpopo province, quite some years ago, actually passed a Library Act, which the Premier never signed because he was advised that there was not funding to implement it. And this is because the provincial budget could not pick up what the municipalities were spending, let alone find funds to actually bring about transformation. So, in a sense, we're now having the fact that we have funding now is driving all sorts of other processes, including legislation. Provinces are now beginning to come forward and pass their legislation, and I hope they will do it in terms of the framework of the norms and standards we are setting. One of which, of course, will be to say you may not charge user fees. The question on Braille, to the Honourable Member, let me just say this. We are working with the South African Council of the Blind to look at rationalising the issue of the provision of services to the visually impaired. You mentioned, ma'am, the Pioneer School in Worcester. There is the Library of the Blind in Grahamstown. There is the Braille services run by Blind SA in Johannesburg. Our department subsidizes the Library of the Blind, which is a public entity, there's an Act of Parliament. But Braille services is a non-profit organization. They receive a subsidy from us, but we can't, the minister can't appoint a board and can't bring them under the PFMA, etc., etc. There are also one or two other service providers. And later this month, in fact, we are having a workshop with stakeholders in the community, the blind sector, to try and get some coordination. Braille SA in Johannesburg has asked us to assist them in obtaining a building because their prison perimeters are so inadequate. However, it's very difficult for us to do it if they aren't a public entity. So we hope that we will be able to say, if we can adjust your status in one way or another, then we can assist you to a greater extent and enable you to deliver services better. However, they do, they maintain the view that we are an organization of the blind, for the blind, by the blind, which is a very noble thing, but it in itself has certain limitations. You asked also about programs to create awareness in about libraries. One of the things we're trying to do with the conditional grant is to actually have awareness-raising programs for libraries. Mpumalanga did a very successful program a year ago called Funda for Fun, a reading program in libraries which gained a lot of publicity in the province and brought a lot of young readers into libraries. The maintenance of ICT facilities in libraries will be done according we. The province which has got it right so far is KZN, and we're trying to follow their models whereby they have a chief director responsible for libraries and archives, who is an absolute boffin on procurement and maintenance issues, Sibongile Nzimande. And she is advising us all from national level across to the other provinces on how they are doing it in KZN. Basically, we are working nationally with SICA to put the systems in place to roll out at the technical level the computers into the libraries. Mobile libraries and mobile units, it is certainly one of the strategies that is being looked at. Northern Cape has gone a long way, but it's being looked at in all provinces, and you have seen information regarding what Western Cape does as well. The toy libraries are an initiative in Northwest, which has started and pioneered this. I think it's gone further than any of the other provinces, and specifically because they are trying to look at early childhood development. By providing toys that kids will want to play with a picture book next to the toy, you can begin to bring them into reading and deepening the reading culture. That's the relationship between the toy libraries and the other libraries. The chairperson, I talked to the elephant in the room around municipal funding. You know, the other elephant, the even bigger one, is the scientific and technological environment at the moment, whereby worldwide there's a young people do not read the way our generation reads. It's changed completely. I could give you lots of examples in my own family which caused me distress with the young, but that's not appropriate in this sort of forum. However, there is a ray of hope. The Free State, the librarian, as you said, the head of the Provincial Library Service, the Honourable Chair, is an individual of mature years, let's say that. And she was actually worried about putting libraries into, computers into libraries because kids wouldn't read books. And when they started in the Free State, she was very pleasantly surprised. You have to actually ration time. You have to say, because there are only four computers in this library, you can't have more than 15 or 20 minutes at a time. When they finish their 20 minutes, they then go to the library and say, please, can I have a book on this subject? So they, in their own young minds, are beginning to establish the link between the modern technology and the book. And if we can encourage that on a wide scale, I think we are beginning to develop a culture of reading in the modern context. Unless the constitution is changed, the function will remain assigned to the provinces. It would possibly help if it became a concurrent rather than an exclusive provincial competence, but we are hoping that with the norms and standards legislation, the community library bill that we are drafting, we will be able to get make the system work as best as it can within the current legal framework. With assignments in terms of a specific act as well as in terms of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. And the chairperson is quite right. The question of the aging profile of the profession is serious. In the KPMG document reports, they cover this extremely well. And they did a presentation to MinMec where they showed graphically how the filling of posts in libraries was going. That the biggest number of posts filled are the managers of the library, the senior librarians, the aging ones. second the sort of second tier of management, both are relatively full, but it drops significantly to under 50% when you get to junior grads. And that means you're not being able to sustain or transform yourself, because proportionately the elderly ones are, there are larger numbers of whites among the older ones. So you're not getting the younger ones coming through. We are using some of the conditional grants this year to begin an investigation into training, because some of the universities are even closing down the faculties to train librarians and archivists. We hope that we will be able to, in next year, even have bursaries available for people to study. But we want the universities to have this conversation with the tertiary institutions so that the training is appropriate for the new environment. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
There's one response that on my question that I get from you to follow up. Just on that. The issue of you referred to about libraries at schools where we improve, you said something new. My English is six lines. I forget to say something. And you talk of whether some reference or material for C journals on your learning areas. I can't remember what you referred to, but you're discouraging books, sort of. But you correct me. I'm not really following what you're saying, because my argument is a level is there. What learners are doing in a classroom environment is one thing. But we also want to encourage the culture of learning,
yeah,
even if it's away from their learning areas. But for them to read your novels or do referencing, that class of referencing, and as well as your normal. I was in follow what you're saying. I may have misunderstood you. Maybe if you can just repeat that for me to have a better understanding.
May I respond, Chair?
Yeah.
Thank you. No, I think I was maybe not answering the question directly enough. Your point, Honourable Member, was that in many school libraries the book stock is old.
Yeah.
And how do we bring new material in? And I think I changed it and answered it from the text that the community library should not actually put textbook on the shelf. Because that's the school's responsibility. The way you phrased it, I think, is clear. We have just begun to work with the Department of Education to address this issue as to how we align the services in community libraries with the services in school libraries, and how and where we can achieve shared services. And quite obviously, when you get down to the question of shared services, that's got to be something that comes from the grassroots up, because the school district, the provincial region will know best the circumstances in the locality as to where we get a best bang for the buck. And you would have to consult with the school governing body, for example, on keeping a school library open for the community after hours. We heard in the earlier presentation of the sports and recreation that school sports facilities can and are being used in certain circumstances by communities. So we need to develop similar strategies. Some of the honourable members on the portfolio committee are actually adopting libraries and their constituencies to bring new books to them. But while that is an excellent initiative, it doesn't deal with the structural problem, and that we have to do in terms of our strategy worked out with the Department of Education. It's not the best answer in the world, but I hope I'll give you a better one next year.
There's only document that is still often done by the library. I think here of saying that it's usually the public or provincial library, blah, 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 blah. There's a fight for quite a long time to build this library. You know, I've been hearing about the Bantana library that came since 2004. And up to now, I see here it looks like not built yet. It looks like it's still a threat to build. It's kind of a long time. What is the focus here in that part?
Chairperson, it's unfortunate that this project has taken a really long time to develop. It began, as you correctly said, in 2004 when the Minister of Arts and Culture said, we have in the Eastern Cape the worst matric results in the country. How can we expect matric results to improve if there are no libraries? And Indalsani is the biggest township outside Soweto, and it has but one library, which is a small satellite of East London City Library, and it's not conveniently located for the way the bulk of people are in the big spreading township. So we began with a pilot project, first of all, to identify what the library needs would be and where we should put another library. Site was identified, and in 2006, if I remember correctly, we presented the report to the minister, the MEC, and the mayor of Butler City, who all agreed on a site, and we began to work on it. Unfortunately, there was some local tension and a dispute over the location where the library should be. That has delayed matters, but we have resolved on the site that was originally decided on. Nobody else, no matter what the arguments were, could actually come up with a better site. So that site, we've transferred funds now to the province, which is going to use the Kucha Development Agency as the implementing agent. And the site has now been surveyed, the plans are being drawn so the construction can begin. And I'm very disappointed at the delays, and so is Minister Jordan, but at least it will move now.
Thank you very much. Remember, if we exhausted all the questions that we wanted to, or the comments that we wanted to make on library. And if that is the case, on your behalf, I want to, I think we did well in terms of time. On your behalf, I would like to thank the doctor and his entourage for the briefing that we received this morning. We think the briefing was a very good one, and we understand where we are now as a country in relation to libraries. And we want to wish the department, and especially this directorate of libraries, to wish them well, actually, in their endeavor. Because we really want to see libraries out there.
Yes.
But we really don't want to see them being white elephants as well.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to be utilized by our people. It therefore means that we need to also have a parallel program of encouraging our people to make use of libraries. You know, it is said in South Africa, if you want to hide something from a person, especially African, you must hide it in a book. Put it in a book, that's why you'll never find it. You see? So I think we must move away from that notion, really. We must move away from it and say, if you want something to be discovered as quick as possible, it's got to be in a book.
Yeah.
That's where we must actually go. And once again, thank you very much for the presentation. The meeting is adjourned. I'm told there's lunch prepared for all of us, 90 Plain Street. And if we move from now in that direction, we will be able to get our lunch. We still have one item to attend to as a committee. But you can move in that direction, we'll find you there. Thank you very much. No, it's lunch. It's down lunch. Maybe it's the last one, I don't know.
Started with that briefing into this committee.
Yeah.
I hope there has been progress.
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree with the best. Okay.
to go to the meeting, I just want to say, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just saying, honorable members, there's a piece of legislation which is, in fact, about three pieces of legislation that will be coming our way, which have actually met the deadline. Education bill. The one that the committee is dealing with, that the portfolio committee is dealing with, is National Qualification Framework Bill. National Education Qualification Framework Bill. And the portfolio committee has a program to deal with that thing. Now, they got their briefing yesterday on the bill. And there will be public hearings on the 30th and the 31st of July. Now, the suggestion that I wanted to make to the committee, because we can only, let me put it this way. The suggestion that I want to make is that we should actually have joint public hearings. So that when this bill comes to us, we don't have to have public hearings on our own. So we have joint public hearings. So when it comes to us, we are able to deal with it with speed that it needs. But in order to do that, we've got to have a briefing ourselves even before the public hearing. Whether I'm saying on the 17th, they had a public hearing. On the 29th, they'll issue an abstract in paper. On the 24th of July, the closing date. 30th and 31st is public hearing. The 5th is the consideration of the bill. Up to the 12th, and the 12th is the consideration of the bill. And thereafter, it will be referred to us. But for us not to have this long-winded process, if we can have public hearings together with them, but if we agree, we will then have to arrange a briefing, maybe next week. Well, let's put it to my children, if you agree, next week, Tuesday, we can have a briefing from the department. Not spoken to them yet, but I mean, I wanted to get this through the committee first. So there's an argument. Yes,
just a second. I'm not really sure, because you see, sometimes we do things that compromise the issue. In the manner that we want to clear up ourselves with the National Assembly when they are doing their own thing. I don't think we have to follow that rule. I'm not sure of the agency, but I should think it becomes a normal process. But I don't want us to from the briefing of the end of the portfolio committee. And then we tend to assume that now we satisfy. But let me just say, I have a problem that we have to do things in the portfolio. I think when it's this committee, we need to do our own program, that we are our program. Unless if there's a situation that us to take and say there is an agency in terms of that the deal is delayed, then we can look into that and say, as a committee, how do we fast track things that we don't delay what is supposed to be completed? Because the stakeholders always have the opportunity to say, we are briefing the end of this portfolio committee. They have not heard us. But now we still have the opportunity to brief the select committee, who may have an ear to us, because these matters are affecting the international, it doesn't necessarily directly affect the problem. But I want us really to steer away from us clubbing this committee with what the national matter the portfolio committee. I'm not comfortable doing that generally because we're a different house.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think what we need to look at is that this is not the only bill that will be coming to us. There's also two science bills that will be coming, and I think another one from I'm not sure, but there are quite a number of pieces of legislation that will be
hitting us in the face. So we will have to do very careful planning in order to finalize this first. Because there are deadlines, and we must meet those deadlines if we first are introduced in time. So I think just perhaps those are the kinds of things that you need to take into consideration in order to do proper planning and so forth. That will guide you in any way.
Now you see, why you know that it has not been our style of work to want to all the time, do things with NPA. It has never been our way of doing things. We've always wanted. But this is Section 25 legislation. You see, there's only one thing and one thing alone that we want to do with the national thing, just to be there in the public hearing. So that we cover ourselves up, so that at some thing we don't have to have another public hearing. That's the only thing. Otherwise, in terms of program, when we are briefed alone, when we deliver it alone, when we pass the bill, we pass it alone. The only thing that I really suggest that we do together is just the public hearing. That's the public hearing. Nothing else. Other processes will do it on our own, as we do. That's actually the suggestion. I don't know. What do you think? Agree?
Yes,
sir.
Agreed.
It's 75. We wouldn't do it with 76. Because 76, it is a promise in the main that must actually do public hearing. It is a need for public hearing. Thank you very much. Can we now go to the minute? Page 1, we have read the minute that's opposed. I presume.
The culture of the news.
Page 1. Page 3. I hope you've heard this one. Page 4.
Page 4.
Yeah.
Committee we can discuss and see if it's possible.
I personally don't have a problem with that. But can we first identify those issues that we think, you know? Let's identify them. And anyone here amongst us must actually do that and give them to us, because we'll look at them and we can actually call them together. There's no problem. I'm not sure it will be during this session of this parliament, because I mean, we are parliament is rising on the 29th. Next week.
Friday.
Next week Friday. And then thereafter we'll only be coming as and when there is business. There will be no normal committee work, I mean, up to next year. But if we think that there are urgent things that we need to do, in those matters, we can do that. There's no problem. I agree with you that. Especially on the whole question of the number of things. Looks like we're moving in different directions. Now, I don't remember that this minute that we had to put aside the other thing, because there are certain things that are not covered. Can you take us on board on those issues that are not covered?
Page 2 of the minute. Opening the bullet, the third, first, second, third paragraph. The bullet, all the bullets were not included in the previous minute. That was the only. The amendment. In the previous minutes, I just said the committee proposed changes. I didn't mention the changes. Now I'm continuing on to the
So these are the changes that are supposed to be in that report, no? That's supposed to be included in that report. Okay. Good. Are we agreeing with this one?
Yes.
Okay. And other issues with the LP. Thank you. Then I think thank you very much, members. This is again. We can go for this one today.
Come on,
then.
Come on,
mama.
How do you get it?
All right. Thank you.